Tonight on the Daily Debrief, the trial of three Chicago police officers accused of covering up for a partner.
This case is about violating the public trust.
It surrounds this deadly shooting of a black teen armed with a knife.
Race has nothing to do with this case.
The trigger man is already behind bars. But what about the men accused of the cover-up? And the man accused of slaughtering his entire family faces a new legal challenge from his wife's parents. Also, the president's former campaign chair faces new legal trouble. That's straight ahead on the Daily Debrief for Tuesday, November 27th.
And good evening, everybody. Opening statements this afternoon in what we're calling the trial of an alleged cop cover-up. It all surrounds what happened in this video, which you've seen before here on Law and Crime. It shows Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke shooting and killing a knife-wielding teenager named Laquan McDonald. Three others are now facing charges of conspiracy, official misconduct, and obstruction of justice. A detective and two officers involved with the case are accused of lying in their official reports by claiming Laquan McDonald attacked the officer who shot him. Let's begin now with the state's opening statement.
About violating the public trust. The case is clear. The case is straightforward and it's concise. It boils down to what defendants wrote on paper versus what is shown on video. The evidence will show that Defendant March, Defendant Gaffney, and Defendant Walsh each knowingly filed false police reports, thereby committing the act of official misconduct and obstruction of justice, and that they participated in a conspiracy to commit those same crimes.
From there, the prosecutor described the shooting from the perspective of an officer who will apparently be the state's star witness. Testifying during the original murder trial against Officer Jason Van Dyke. Prosecutors say she will testify that she saw one thing, but that official reports penned by at least one of the defendants put different words in her mouth.
She could hear drop the knife. She could hear the bullets. She saw him twitching. She saw the smoke come from his body. What she did not know and will testify to is that she did not see McDonald attack or attempt to attack anyone before or during the shooting. She did not see him swing the knife in an aggressive, exaggerated manner toward anyone. She did not see him continue to advance toward Van Dyke. Nor did she see him raise his arm toward Van Dyke as if attacking Van Dyke. She did not see him raise knife across his chest over shoulder. She did not see McDonald point the knife at Van Dyke. She did not see him attempt to get up while he was being shot by Van Dyke. She did not see him batter anyone. Yet the evidence will show that official police reports completed by Defendant March and others contain those false statements.
From there, the prosecutor flat out accused the three defendants of covering up what really happened.
Immediately after the shooting of Laquan McDonald, the issue of justification became important. Those who are sworn to tell the truth began to fashion a story, to shape a narrative, to provide false information and create the lies that were designed to help Van Dyke avoid the consequences of his actions, to help Van Dyke avoid the punishment that might come with using deadly force without justification. Instead of protecting the scene, gathering names of witnesses, trying to find out who had a clear view of the incident, as required in general orders, the evidence will show that two citizens who were in their vehicle within yards of the shooting were shooed away by the officers who failed to ask them for any contact information, to give them contact information, or to even ask a single question about whether they saw what had happened. They gathered dash cam video and they viewed it at the Dunkin' Donuts, which was across the street. Officers Fontaine and Viramonte were put in charge of collecting preliminary information for the case incident report. Officer Fontaine will testify that that all of the substantive information that she put in her reports was given to her by Defendant March. Defendant March told her to list the defendants, Walsh and Gaffney, and Van Dyke, as victims of an aggravated assault by McDonald, stating that Van Dyke had been injured by offender.
Prosecutors went from there back to the promised testimony of Officer Dora Fontaine to sum up what they say went wrong.
There will be testimony that when Officer Fontaine found out months later that Defendant March's reports included a false statement attributed to her, she was furious. She immediately contacted her lawyer. She wanted to set the record straight. But her reward for telling the truth was to be called a rat and to be told that she would not be safe on street duty. These simple, yet very important acts, lying on official police reports, are the crux of this case. Official misconduct, obstruction of justice, conspiracy to commit those acts. The evidence in this case will be clear. Defendants March, Walsh, and Gaffney each knowingly gave false information with the intent to obstruct the potential prosecution and punishment of fellow officer Van Dyke, and intentionally and knowingly provided false information in direct contravention to their duties and obligations under the law as public servants. And they conspired with others known and unknown to do so. Instead of serving and protecting all citizens of Chicago, the defendants tried to protect only one, Jason Van Dyke, by trying to create a false justification for the shooting of Laquan McDonald by Jason Van Dyke.
Matthew Mangino joins us tonight here on the Daily Debrief to analyze this case. Matthew, good evening.
Good evening.
So generally speaking, your thoughts on those opening statements from the state?
Well, one thing that caught my attention was at the very end and at the very beginning and the very end, she says that this is going to be a simple, clear-cut case, and I don't think that it's going to be. I think that you have to rely on these reports, but you also have to know, who wrote these reports, who approved these reports, and in fact, is this just the perception of those specific officers and detective with regard to what's in these reports? So, holding the police to a high standard in terms of what's in their individual reports is going to be difficult to do.
So this was a bench trial. The prosecutor isn't there trying to play to a jury. How else does that change things, that the litigators are only speaking to the judge?
It changes things in terms of your approach, your demeanor. You may not, be as animated as you might be in front of a jury. The judge is there. The judge knows the law. The judge has reviewed everything that's available in terms of the evidence in this case and listens to the evidence. It's not as though you're necessarily trying to sway someone's emotions. That's why a judge has been selected in this case to hear this case, and the defense wanted that, because you're not going to inspire those kind of passions that you might with a jury.
Exactly. Well, let's head back to court here, where each defendant's attorney gave an opening statement. The first attacked the prosecutor and the victim.
David March is an innocent man. Not just because he's presumed innocent, it's because he actually is innocent. And what counsel just told you in her opening statement will not be borne out by the evidence. First of all, I don't know why she said it, but counsel interjected in her opening statement the race of Laquan McDonald. Race has nothing to do with this case. This case is about law and order. It's about Laquan McDonald not following any laws that night. There must be some individual responsibility attached to McDonald. Counsel says McDonald committed
nonviolent crimes. Nothing could be further from the truth. Laquan McDonald is armed with a knife. Under Illinois law, Judge, you're going to find out that knife is a Category 2 dangerous weapon. And with that knife, he is committing forcible felonies. He is burglarizing trucks in a truck yard several blocks away. Now, counsel will say that's a nonviolent crime. Well, maybe, but it is a forcible felony, and that's important. It's important for David March and the complete investigation he did in this case.
The defense for the next officer said the whole issue in this case is that his client perceived the shooting differently from what the video shows.
The theory is, as I understand it correctly, is that a video contradicts what a human being's perception was of events on October 20th, 2014. And it's absolutely fundamental to our system of justice that human beings, based upon who we are, perceive things differently. And on October 20th of 2014, Joe Walsh was a 16-year patrolman in the 8th District. He was assigned a partner. His partner was Jason Van Dyke. That would be the second time in his entire career that he had been ever assigned for Jason Van Dyke to be his partner. And I bring that up to you, Judge, because in the indictment in this case, it is alleged, and you have heard a presentation, that somehow Joe Walsh began on the evening of October 20th to engage in and to agree to be a member of a conspiracy to help an individual who had only been his partner one time before.
The final defense opening for the third officer charged here said the only reason his client was on trial was because prosecutors disagreed with his written report concerning the incident.
Judge, what is Tom Gaffney doing here?
Because they disagreed with the report that he wrote, he must have attached himself to some type of conspiracy to obstruct justice, some type of conspiracy to prevent independent criminal investigators of finding the real truth of what happened to Laquan McDonald during the shooting. The evidence will show, Judge, that that theory is complete and utter nonsense. What the state doesn't have, and what they didn't tell you, Judge, is they don't have a lick of evidence that there was any type of conspiracy here. They don't have a shred of evidence that Tom Gaffney agreed to obstruct what really happened to Laquan McDonald during the course of the shooting. In fact, Judge, the evidence is going to show just the opposite. Tom Gaffney was not a witness to the shooting. He didn't see what happened during the shooting. He never said he saw what happened during the shooting. How the heck could he ever be part of an agreement to conceal the real facts of what happened during that shooting that he never saw?
Vangino, back to analyze this case with us tonight. Matthew, I want to break these defenses down with you. One defense is basically to say the victim, Laquan McDonald, is the real lawbreaker here. What do you make of that?
I don't know that I like that approach, because this case isn't about Laquan McDonald. It's about these police officers and the reports that they wrote. And you're talking to a judge. You're not talking to a jury. So you're not going to, you know, get passion, get people's emotions involved. You're talking to a judge here.
The second officer's defense is to say, okay, my officer wrote down what he thought happened, and it turned out the video showed something different. That's not a crime because people perceive things differently. Your analysis of that?
That's not a bad argument. I mean, I don't think that that we can say that people will interpret things in the same way that they observe. And we do know that there are times where eyewitnesses in case, disinterested witnesses, see things differently than other witnesses, or see things differently than what's actually captured on a videotape. So that's not a bad approach.
Now, the third defense is basically, I wasn't involved with this beyond writing the report, and just because prosecutors don't like what they saw in it doesn't make that a crime.
Well, I think the key to this case is going to be, are the inconsistencies in the individual reports, are they, similar? And if they're similar, is that the crux of the report, or is that just something that's basically on the periphery of the report? We know these reports in a case like this will be lengthy. We'll see where this all goes.
Yeah, it's going to be really curious to see exactly where all these defenses go. Of course, each defendant gets his own shot at an opening, and each defense attorney is getting to cross-examine each witness. So Matthew Mangino will check in again with you at the end of the broadcast here. The only witness who took the stand today in this case was a record services officer for the Chicago Police Department. That officer basically suggested that the defendant's reports were written to make Laquan McDonald look like the primary aggressor.
McDonald raised the knife across his chest and over his shoulder, pointing the knife at Van Dyke.
What did Defendant March report next?
Van Dyke believed McDonald was attacking Van Dyke with the knife and attempting to kill Van Dyke.
What did Defendant March report next?
In defense of his life, Van Dyke backpedaled and fired his handgun at McDonald to stop the attack.
What did he report next?
McDonald fell to the ground, but continued to move and continued to grasp the knife, refusing to let it go of it.
What did Defendant March report next?
Van Dyke continued to fire his weapon at McDonald as McDonald was on the ground, as McDonald appeared to be attempting to get up, all the while continuing to point the knife at Van Dyke.
So the question is whether the report, which characterizes trigger man Jason Van Dyke in a positive light and the victim in a negative light, amounts to a criminal cover-up. That's the big question here. Testimony in this case continues tomorrow. Still ahead tonight here, though, on the Daily Debrief, a botched test lands a woman in jail. What happens now that police have evidence she's not a criminal? We'll discuss that. Plus, the Colorado man who admitted to killing his wife, his daughters, and his unborn child faces a new legal battle after he admitted his guilt. Stick around for part two of the Daily Debrief after the break.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody. The parents of murder victim Shannan Watts are suing the husband who admitted to slaughtering his entire family. Watts pleaded guilty to killing his wife and children and to causing the death of his unborn child. Shannan's parents are seeking more than $100,000 in damages. That's in addition to nearly $42,000 in restitution the judge in the criminal case already ordered Chris Watts to pay his wife's parents. Watts received five life sentences and an additional sentence of 48 years and an additional sentence on top of that of 36 years for the crimes he admitted he committed against his family. A hearing for the civil suit is scheduled for January 28th. The former president of Michigan State University is out on bond tonight after being charged with lying to police about a sex abuse scandal. Luana Simon was allowed to turn over her passport and pay $5,000 on a personal recognizance bond. Authorities have accused her of lying about her knowledge of the Larry Nassar Gymnastics sexual assault investigation. Simon will be back in court December 18th for a probable cause conference. New legal trouble this week for former Donald Trump campaign chair Paul Manafort. Attorneys with the Office of Special Counsel Robert Mueller reportedly believe Manafort lied about a number of matters after striking a plea deal. Manafort admitted to financial crimes and agreed to cooperate with authorities before sentencing. Manafort's lawyers, however, believe he has been truthful and that the special counsel's office is simply upset that it did not get more out of Manafort. If a judge agrees with the special counsel, Manafort's sentence could be increased. Another case we're following this week has been delayed. Mackenzie Kinigi and her boyfriend Philip Williams are suspected of murder in Iowa over the death of Jessica Gomez. Authorities believe the couple killed Gomez in Kinigi's apartment, then went to the store to purchase cleanup supplies. No new trial date has been set as of yet. Time now for a check of other criminal incidents making headlines. Here is Anthony Velez.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on LawAndCrime.com and across the country. A man in Florida is under arrest after he allegedly left his PlayStation 4 mic on as he raped a teen girl. 18-year-old Daniel Enrique Fabian is accused of sexually assaulting a 15-year-old teen in his new Port Richey home in June. Fabian failed to realize the mic on his console headphones was still active, and other gamers allegedly heard the unidentified teen say no before Fabian raped her. Fabian allegedly went back to playing his video game after the assault. He now faces charges of lewd and lascivious battery on a person between the ages of 12 and 15. A man is facing charges in Florida after he allegedly stabbed a woman in the head with a fork over an undercooked potato. 36-year-old Kenneth Crumpton is accused of stabbing the woman in the head multiple times with a fork before being arrested by authorities. Crumpton claims he threw the fork at the woman and it only glanced off her head. Crumpton now faces charges of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. Casey Anthony reportedly has no intentions of reaching out to her father, George, who remains hospitalized after a car crash left him with serious injuries. George Anthony reportedly flipped his vehicle several times on a highway in Daytona Beach, allegedly after suffering a medical issue while driving. He was airlifted to Halifax Medical Center with incapacitating injuries. Anthony and his daughter have been on the outs since her 2011 acquittal for the murder of her daughter, 2-year-old Kaylee. A woman in Georgia who spent 3 months in jail after authorities thought the cotton candy they found in her car was methamphetamine filed a federal lawsuit against the officials who stopped her and the manufacturer of the faulty drug test kit. Dasha Fincher was accused of trafficking drugs while she was pulled over, and officers discovered what they thought was a large quantity of meth based on a roadside drug test kit that tested positive for the drug. Fincher spent 3 months in jail before a crime lab revealed the blue substance was indeed cotton candy. Fincher is now suing Monroe County, the officers who arrested her, and the manufacturer of the test kits. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
Matthew Mangino, let's talk about that last one very quickly here before we wrap up. So cotton candy, methamphetamine, and the roadside test can't tell the difference between the two.
Right. I mean, that's a crazy case, especially when you spend 3 months in jail waiting for the drug results. But, you know, police have qualified immunity. And even if their mistaken belief is based on a faulty kit, they may be immune from suit. It'll be interesting to see how this case moves forward.
Yeah, I'm curious. A lot of different defendants here, and it may be dismissed against some and not against others. Matthew Mangino, thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Aaron.
That's all the time we have for today on the Daily Debrief. We will be back live in the so-called cop cover-up trial starting tomorrow at 9 a.m. And of course, I'll see you here on the Daily Debrief tomorrow starting at 5 p.m. Have a good evening, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow.